BFW Chicago Football Podcast this week is brought to you by Loot Crate. Head to lootcrate.com/Shaw. Use our promo code Shaw, S-H-A-W. You'll get $3 off your first crate. And if you do so before November 19th, you'll get the November Crate, which is an exclusive one from Loot Crate, featuring items from Doctor Strange, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, and Big Trouble in Little China, and more. Loot Crate has cast a powerful and ancient spell to deliver you the goods this month for November. Seeing previews for these movies for Doctor Strange and Fantastic Beasts throughout the past month. Both movies look awesome. I can only imagine you're going to get some really cool stuff in your Loot Crate for the month of November. Again, you have until the 19th, but go ahead and subscribe and get ready for December's crate. Use our promo code Shaw, S-H-A-W, at lootcrate.com/Shaw. Well, somebody's got to do it. Let's talk some Bears. Hello and welcome to PFW Chicago Football Podcast. Kevin Fishbane here. We are going to be your support group, Bears fans, through what has turned into
a safe space.
Safe space here for what has turned into an absolute train wreck of the 2016 NFL season. Boy, oh boy, a lot changed in 48 hours, 24 hours, really, this past week. Follow me on Twitter at KFishbane. Follow all of our Bears content at Bears_Insider. You can go online to ProFootballWeekly.com/Bears for our Bears content. And hey, while you're there, just peruse ProFootballWeekly.com and see what we're writing about good teams around the league. Joined by my producer, John Solly, today at JSolly. It's good to see you in studio, John. New father, Henry, is 3 weeks old or a month old? Where are we at?
3 weeks old, yeah. He's doing pretty well and just got a picture. He's pretty drunk and passed out. So
classic Henry.
Yeah.
Well, good for him, and he is too young to have to pay attention to this Bears team.
Thank God.
So the last couple weeks, this was the most confident 2-6 team in the history of the NFL. And I didn't roll my eyes at it. I understood it. You know, they were healthy. They'd come off a big win on primetime TV, although a win that looks worse and worse, as bad as the Vikings have gotten. And they're coming off the bye. They got a full week off. They got some vacation time in. And they were going to Tampa to face a Bucs team that was bad and hadn't won all season long, get the ball that first drive. They're running the ball, Jordan Howard running all over people. And they stalled. And then they get the ball back. They had a 3rd and 2. In Bucs territory, even though Jordan Howard had been running all over the Bucs, they decided to go empty backfield, and Jay Cutler threw the first interception. And then things just went off the rails. And Jay's first couple of throws were fine, and then his next few before the interception were bad, just real bad overthrows. And you could just tell it was going to be a Jay day. It was going to be one of those games.
He let you know early.
He does. Nice. And we haven't seen this that often the past few years where he just continues to unravel. There have been times he's actually rallied back. This was not one of those days. Then the Bears get it 1st and goal at the 7, and they call 3 pass plays in a row. I know John Fox, when I asked him about it, said a shovel pass is like a run, but that shovel pass resulted in Kyle Long's ankle injury. Injury to insult. And then, of course, Jay Cutler throws an interception in the end zone. A couple lost fumbles for Jay. Excuse me, that was a fumble near the end zone. You had the fumble that was a safety. Jordan Howard lost a fumble. And then, the defense have been playing fine. Stopping the run, containing Mike Evans. And you go to the third quarter, you get that crazy Hail Mary before halftime. And they had the Bucs 3rd and long and Winston on the loose running around into his own end zone, and he heaves it downfield, and that was the ball game. Mike Evans makes the catch. Then he throws it to some guy named Freddie on the next play for a touchdown, and it was over. So we're sitting in Hallis Hall on Monday thinking, wow, look what's happened to this team. I mean, you know, just at 11:59 a.m. Central Time, on Sunday, you were thinking, hey, they're going to win here, 3-6. You got an easy slate coming up. The NFC North is bad. They could be 2 games out of the lead with another game against the Lions, Vikings, and Packers in December. And then you have the long injury. You have a terrible game. And then the news comes at around 2 o'clock Alshon Jeffrey suspended for 4 games for PEDs. Unbelievable where this thing is now. 2-7 Chicago Bears. They're going to be out with their best offensive playmaker for the next 4 games. Their best player, period, Kyle Long, who we think is out for the season. Nothing has been confirmed. And a quarterback that showed you why you can't count on him consistently, week in, week out. And then they're going to travel to New York this week. And it's unbelievable how much everything changed like that. And I think some people, John, are saying, this team's always been bad. We knew they were a bad team. That was complete fool's gold at Halloween. And we all picked the Bears to win last week. Everybody did. There are a few writers that picked that went against and picked the Buccaneers. But here you are, and it is utter despair for this team. And you know, what do you have to hope for?
Yeah, I mean, this team went from, hey, maybe playoffs, you know, maybe possible, sort of depending on how the rest of the division goes, and like you said, an easy slate, to, boy, how does the draft look? And Jay Cutler not really coming back after this season, at least I don't think so, from my perspective. So, yeah, this team has really turned in, and, you know, now they'll... I've heard from at least a bunch of my friends saying, why is John Fox still there? Why,
yeah.
What's the point in him being there anymore?
And that's going to turn into a talking point for sure. Because, look, your team's 2-7. They are 8-17 now under the Fox Pace era. And he was kind of matter of fact on Monday. Just like, we'll figure it out. We'll get back at it. You know, we face adversity and we continue moving forward. But, you know, he said after the bye, you know, we could be 2-14 or 10-6. Well, they're closer to 2-14 now, and 10-6 is out of the realm of possibility because math. So we're going to get into we're going to get kind of big picture this week with Cutler and Jeffrey in a few minutes. Eric Edholm, a friend of the program from Yahoo Sports Shutdown Corner, NFL writer, is going to join to give a little bit of his perspective. He covers the whole league, but he's also based out here in Chicago, so he knows the Bears well. I want to get his take on, you know, what this means for Cutler, if anything. I think there's some people that say that Sunday shouldn't have changed anything for the way you view Jay Cutler and his future. And I've seen in either direction. People say you still need to keep him. And people said, no, you should have known already you're going to get rid of him. So we'll get into that a little bit with Eric. I also want his take on Alshon Jeffrey. Does the suspension impact his long-term viability at the Bears? I would argue that the Bears should still re-sign Alshon Jeffrey.
I would agree with that.
They have no other playmakers at wide receiver they can count on. And look, he's been healthy. He's started all 9 games, and he's played almost every snap. I think we might know why he was able to stay healthy, obviously.
And, you know,
hey, he's resourceful. Give him that.
Well, could you get the good resources then?
Because the legal resources.
Yeah.
So you have no idea what we're going to get from Kevin White in December if he comes back or next year. You know, you're not building an offense around Cameron Meredith, Marquise Wilson, Eddie Royal. You know, the running game has been great, but look around the league. These teams have great receivers. And even the teams that don't have, like, that clear-cut number one guy have so much more talent around them and have the quarterback. See, with Alshon, you could have a young quarterback who isn't, you know, one of the top guys, and you could still be successful because he can high-point the ball and contort his body in ways other receivers can't do to make big plays for you. He attracts attention from the defense. I still think you re-sign him. I think maybe this can help the Bears in their leverage, and they can.
I was going to ask, is he cheaper now?
I think they can make the argument for sure. You know, this is another example of him not being on the field.
There are plenty of those.
Yep, I think they can make that. They can certainly make that argument while in negotiations. But then you have to wonder if they're going to bother. Maybe they don't want it. Maybe they'll want to deal with it. Look, we've seen what this team does if they don't want someone on their team, a talented player, Brandon Marshall, Martellus Bennett. Which brings it back to Jay.
Are you going to make the case?
No, I'm not going there yet. But if John Fox and Ryan Pace didn't want Jay Cutler to be their quarterback, he'd be gone a long time ago.
you would say that he would just not be on the roster.
Yeah, and I know the quarterback's a different position. You can get away with moving on from Marshall and Bennett, but this team's made it clear who they want on this team, and they had a lot of time to think about Cutler. Now, when it comes to next season, I think everything's up for grabs. And you know, the report that came out about players saying, you know, that they'd given up on him,
and that he was woefully underprepared.
He stunk on Sunday.
Yeah.
Who, you know, what did those guys say after they beat Minnesota? And he gave them the inspirational speech and played a great game coming off injury. So I'm not saying the report is false, don't get me wrong, but I don't put a ton of stock into things like that. You know, there's players in there that'll go to bat for him, and there's players in there that just might not be a fan. That's just the way it is in the NFL. So we'll talk about the futures of Cutler and Jeffrey with Eric Edholman in just a few minutes. And then Paul Schwartz of the New York Post is going to join to talk about Bears-Giants. Does anybody want to watch Bears-Giants?
No.
Each Monday, I let you know who the broadcast team is, and usually people kind of get excited about it, or they, and by excitement I mean they all complain about the announcers. This week it's Kevin Burkhart and John Lynch. For those curious, I got like no reaction because I imagine people just don't want to watch this team. Here's a reason to watch: Robbie Gould.
The Robbie Gould revenge game.
So
after the Chris Conte revenge game.
There you go. Tracy Porter versus Odell Beckham will be a fun matchup. So we'll get into that with Paul Schwartz at the end of the show. But let's get more into the Jeffrey and Cutler situations and what to think about this Bears team as a whole from a national perspective with Yahoo Sports' Eric Edholm. Joined right now by Eric Edholm, the NFL writer for Yahoo Sports Shutdown Corner. Follow him on Twitter at Eric_Edholm. He is a friend of the program. Eric, it's been too long since we've had you on, so we waited until the Bears were a dumpster fire, and then we decided to bring you on the show.
That's good timing. You know, I'm kind of a dumpster fire myself, so that works out quite well. A nice little harmony right there.
Yeah, perfect. So it all works out, and I wanted your take on the kind of big picture look at the Bears. And before we get into Cutler and Jeffrey, which teams in the league would you say are in a worse shape than the Bears? Because, you know, there's bad teams. Like the Browns, at least you know you're getting the number one pick. If you're, you know, the Jets, you might have hope in Bryce Petty or Christian Hackenberg. The Bears don't have that. I mean, are there teams that are in worse shape than Chicago?
Yeah, I mean, you probably start with what you just said, the developmental quarterback, or at least the young option. And I don't think Matt Barkley falls into that category. I think we may not have seen much from him, but we sort of know exactly what we're kind of getting there. You know, it's tough because at least a team like the Jaguars, let's say, okay, they've got young talent. I don't know if Blake Bortles is salvageable, but he's got some ability, and the right quarterback coach or offensive coordinator could bring it out of him. They've got talent on defense, so I would put the Jaguars in better shape right now. You know, the 49ers seem like a very familiar and similar team to what the Bears are right now, and, you know, I think Chip Kelly is probably safe. That seems to be the feeling out of there. I don't know that Colin Kaepernick gives you much more than what we've seen, which has been okay the last couple weeks, but yeah, I'd say they're kind of on even footing, and I'll be curious to see what that game bears in a couple weeks. And, you know, the Browns, like you said, at least they have a ton of draft picks, somebody who might be able to be groomed in Kessler. Are they a worse football team now? Probably, yes. But, you know, a year or two from now, that turnaround could be quick, especially in a division that's been so bad this year. I mean, what, 12-24-1, so yeah, there aren't a lot. The list is not very long, especially if you look at the records, Bengals, Panthers, Chargers, you know, teams like that. You know, they're in better shape, I think, overall.
You know, the NFL, with their ratings problem, they should put some kind of stake on that Bears 49ers game. I mean, they should. I don't know what they can do. Maybe the loser of the game doesn't get to play the rest of their season. And then you can see who fans root for. Maybe the fan bases for both teams would root for them to lose, so they don't have to watch them the rest of December. I think there's a really golden opportunity for Roger Goodell for that Bears Niners game.
Yeah, I think it's a modest proposal. I think it could work, and fans of the draft process will tune in. I think fans maybe rooting against their own team could be saying, I want that number one or number two pick. And, yeah, we could really have something here.
So let's talk about Jay Cutler, your favorite, everyone's favorite conversation topic. Sure. in this city when it comes to this Bears team. Do you think that his awful performance Sunday, in your mind, did it change at all whether you thought the Bears should keep him or part ways at the end of the season?
Not really, I guess. I mean, all it made me think was that the Vikings game might have been his last sort of gasp, his last contribution to the team. I mean, you know, he played really well in that game. And supposedly, I mean, you talked to the guys. So supposedly, he sort of rallied them a little bit, not the thing we necessarily associate with him. So to come back a week later, and Lord knows what was going through Bears fans' minds when they saw Chris Conte with that interception. yeah, I'm sure that was a fun moment, but... I don't necessarily think it changed much. I don't think the Vikings game bumped him up or made it more likely, and I don't think this game made it less likely, only because you keep him only if you think we have no other option or we cannot acquire another quarterback like a Kirk Cousins or like a rookie in the draft, somebody like that.
I think everyone is just assuming the Bears are going to draft a quarterback. I don't know when, but it makes perfect sense. I mean, they kind of have to. So the question then is, who do you want to be the veteran? Is it, you know, do you stick with Jay as the bridge? Do you re-sign Brian Hoyer? Do you take a chance on Connor Shaw because they really liked him before he got hurt? Do you go, you know, put up a huge trade for Garoppolo? Do you go sign Nick Foles? I mean, based on the way you look at this league and what works and what doesn't, I mean, what do you think is kind of a good route for them in terms of who that veteran should be?
Yeah, I mean, I would like to see a Hoyer-Shaw rookie combination because I think that would work out. And if they, you know, if they feel like that's one step back in the short term for a couple steps forward in the long term, I'm okay with it. Follically challenged quarterbacks, nonetheless. I think they're nice guys, and I think they're smart and they're hard workers. I mean, like you said, Shaw at least, you know, gave them some excitement in the preseason. He's always known as a gamer and a winner in college. Could never stay healthy, but you know, Hoyer did some things while he was in there. Not amazing, but some things. And could you live with him being the starter for X number of games next year? I think you could. And you start looking at the free agent market, and there's not a lot of offerings out there, and there's not a lot that I think would be an upgrade over that. So I think I'd be okay with that and letting Cutler go, because I don't necessarily think Jay's going to help groom or mentor any rookie they bring in, and it may only impede his progress in the long run.
Especially if they bring in somebody who's anti-Trump. You know, that you could get some friction there.
Exactly.
It's not going to make that quarterback room great again. Tell you that.
Don't draft a quarterback from California or New York or something like that. You know?
Yeah, and I will say about the hair situation, I wonder if Brian Hoyer and Connor Shaw would feel more confident not having to share a room with Jay, who, if you're gonna, you could say what you will on him, he's got a great head of hair.
Oh my goodness! I mean, right? I would put him in the top 10 hair wise, and maybe top 5, and that has to be a strain on the locker room, Kevin. That just absolutely has to be something that's hurting this team right now.
You know, with 7 weeks left, I think we're you know, reaching for stories about this team. I think that might be one to dive into. Let's shift gears to Alshon Jeffrey. Kind of similar question. Does the suspension, how does it impact maybe not only his chance to return to the Bears, but what that does it do anything to his market in the offseason?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, obviously his quote, what about being deeply upset or whatever it was probably as much for his next employer as anything else. That's my guess, you know. You know, I know he had a very professional sounding release on Twitter and all that stuff, but it sounds exactly like every other release. Now, that said, in the big picture, if you look at some of the big free agents who've signed the last 4 or 5 years, a lot of them have these kind of black marks on their career, you know, whether it's, you know, Ndamukong Suh or somebody like that, or if it's a performance-enhancing drug situation, it's not unusual, and it's not a huge deterrent. I disagree a little bit with my colleague Charles Robinson of Yahoo, who just came out with his free agent list, and he kind of bumped Alshon down a little bit. Is it true that it's been now, what, 3 years since his best season? Yeah, okay, that's fair to point out. But that has nothing to me to do with the suspension. Is it one more thing we have to worry about? Yeah, but I would also say, look at what the Eagles did when they signed Lane Johnson to that contract extension. They put language in his deal to protect the team against a possible second suspension, which is what he got this season, 10 games. So they were able to kind of recoup some of that bonus money. And I suspect any deal that Alshon signs, whether it's in Chicago or more likely somewhere else, probably is going to have the same type of thing, even though it's not considered a great receiver market. There's enough talent in college, I think, to for a team to feel comfortable saying, we're only going to sign him if he signs the kind of contract that we want.
Right. Now, with the team as bad as they are right now, I'm still hesitating to throw, for obvious reasons, I'm hesitating to go the what's John Fox's future route. Yeah. Because of who Fox is and what this team went through a couple of years ago. But I still think if you look at this roster, Ryan Pace has had two decent drafts. We've seen Leonard Floyd play well, Jordan Howard, obviously, Cody Whitehair, Eddie Goldman. You know, I still, and maybe I'm glass half full on this, so you can tell me if I'm crazy for at least just this reason, not others. A consistent quarterback that can kind of calm things down, this team could still be one that could contend for something next year. I mean, there's enough pieces around there. Am I crazy for thinking that?
No, I don't think you are. I mean, look, you know, what Mariota's doing for the Titans, or look what some of these other young quarterbacks, you know, are doing that can take a mediocre team to really high levels like Russell Wilson did, for instance, or take a bad team and at least make them competitive and respectable. I mean, that's kind of what Mariota did through an uneven season. He got a little banged up last year, but, you know, it's a good example of somebody who they're extremely pleased with him now. You know, he's smart, he's committed, he's athletic, he's accurate. The right guy, you know, in the Titans 2 years ago, I was saying, boy, where's the talent on this team? You know, name me their five best players. And now here you are, two productive drafts, you know, heading into a year where they have extra draft picks. They're contending now. They have a formula that's theirs. They can embrace it. They run the ball and stuff. So, yeah, I mean, the right quarterback, it's a trickle-down effect. It takes pressure off the defense. It makes the playmakers better. It allows the coach to kind of define what kind of team it is. Now, I don't know if that's going to be Fox or not, but, you know, they bring in an outside consultant and all these whispers, and the team seems kind of lost a little bit. You know, if he's gone, is everybody else in trouble too? Is Ryan Pace in trouble? Is this another GM change? So I'm fascinated to see how it plays out, like you, without knowing really what the end game is or whether he truly is on the quote-unquote hot seat.
We'll wrap up with this. Are the Detroit Lions going to win the NFC North?
Well, I mean, look, I wouldn't have thought so even a week ago or 2 weeks ago, but you start looking at their I mean, they play each of the NFC North teams one more time. They still have a little work to do on that division record. They're, 1-2, I think. You know, at 5-4, we can't see there in the catbird seat, but winnable game against the Jaguars, coming off the bye. Another home game against the Vikings, a team they just beat. They play the Bears once more. I don't know the Giants are going to remain as good as their record would indicate. But they also have tough games, too. Cowboys, Packers, I think they play the Saints as well. So, yeah, I mean, it's right now I still feel like either the Vikings or Packers will figure this thing out. But you got to give Jim Caldwell credit. You know, I mean, they've found some solutions here where I didn't necessarily think there were some. And, you know, Matthew Stafford is going to cash in one way or the other.
Yeah, it's wild to think how much has changed since the Bears beat the Lions in week 4 at Soldier Field. Eric Edholm, Yahoo Sports NFL Shutdown Corner. Go follow him on Twitter at Eric_Edholm. He coined Deflategate. I didn't know that,
maybe.
Eric. Maybe coined it.
Yeah, some analytics guy or some writer, I should say, reached out to me a couple weeks after that story broke and said, "Did you realize you were the first one to use that phrase?" And I said, no, because it was about 30 minutes after the game ended. And I hate the gate, you know, suffix, but deflate, gate, it rhymed, I had to do it, and that's where we're at.
Well, that's where we stand, and hopefully this podcast won't run into any pod gates anytime soon. We avoided it with this interview. But Eric, thanks as always for analysis and your time, and the next time the Bears are unraveling, we'll have you on again.
I'm sure we'll talk draft at that point.
All right, take care.
See you, man.
All right. Always good stuff from friend of the program, Eric Edholm, Yahoo Sports Shutdown Corner. Go check out his stuff. I want to talk to you about another sponsor of ours, Fan Essentials. How would you like to get all of your favorite NFL teams merchandise delivered straight to your doorstep? Go check out fanessentials.net. Go pick out your favorite sports team, and every month you get your team's gear shipped right to your door. They find the sports gear so you don't have to, and each fan box comes packed full with amazing gear. It's a great gift idea. Holidays are coming up around the corner. Prices start at just $34.99, and if you use our promo code Chicago at checkout, you get 30% off your first month. FanEssentials.net. Use that promo code Chicago. And hey, if you don't want Bears gear for yourself, maybe it could be a fun little prank gift for a friend. So you can send it their way. FanEssentials.net. Use our promo code Chicago at checkout. Time to shift gears a little bit. We always look forward. The season's not ending. It's not over. They still have a game on Sunday. They still have 7 games left. They travel to New York, New Jersey, to play the New York football Giants, Eli Manning, Odell Beckham, Robbie Gould, etc. So we want to learn a little bit about the Giants, see if the Bears have a chance to get an upset win. And the way the Bears have gone, and we'll talk about this, John, after this interview, it wouldn't stun me if they went in there and got a win, because it's just kind of what the Bears have been known to. But we're going to jump behind enemy lines right now with Paul Schwartz. All right, I learned a little bit more about the Bears' opponent this week, the New York Giants. We talked to Paul Schwartz. He covers the Giants for the New York Post. You can follow him on Twitter at NYPost_Schwartz. We're recording this on Tuesday right after the Giants win over the Bengals. And Paul, looking at the numbers from that game, I want to start with the rushing attack. Kind of amazing what they were able to do, especially in the fourth quarter, the way things had been for the Giants running the ball. What was working for them late in that game?
Well, you're right. I mean, you know, I'm certainly 27 rushing attempts and 122 yards is not going to reverberate around the National Football League as some kind of offensive explosion on the ground, but that's what it was for the Giants. It was a season high in yardage on the ground. Rashad Jennings had 15 carries, 87 yards, and 38 of those yards came on the last drive. The Giants have been incredibly unable to close out games with their offense. You know, the last... They've won 4 straight games, and their first 3 wins in this streak, the defense has been on the field, you know, forced to, you know, keep the other team out of the end zone to protect close wins. And this game, the Giants hit the field with 3:01 left and ran out the clock, which is has not happened before. It was a couple of things. I think Ben McAdoo stuck with it. He had confidence in the group, and it's interesting because the offensive line was kind of shaken up. Their best offensive lineman, Justin Pugh, did not play in the game. And his replacement, Brett Jones, a Canadian who was a CFL player 2 years ago, hurt his calf 8 plays into the game. So that forced Marshall Newhouse, who was really a tackle, to come off the bench and play left guard, a position he hasn't played with regularity since high school. So it was kind of a makeshift group up front, but they did a good job. Eli got them out of some running plays and into better running plays, different ones, and it worked. So for one night, the Giants' running game was an excellent complement to their very good passing attack.
Now, looking at this game on Sunday, you know, that's one area the Bears are going to try to gain an advantage because their front seven's playing well and their pass rush has been good. But, Paul, looking at the numbers, you know, I haven't watched a ton of Giants games this season, kind of catching up on them this week. I'm kind of surprised when you mentioned the injuries in the offensive line that they protected Eli Manning as well as they've had. What's gone into the protection for him?
They, you know, on the surface, yes, Eli was sacked once, and it looks like, you know, the protection was good. He was under more duress than that. Yeah, he got hit more in this game, especially in the first half, than the Giants would like. Geno Atkins was a problem early in the game, certainly, for the Giants. And, you know, they kind of did a better job afterwards. But, you know, the low sack totals, a lot of it has to do with Eli. It really does. I think their pass protection has been good, but not great. One underrated aspect of this is Rashad Jennings is really, really terrific in pass protection. He has not allowed a pressure all season at running back. That's why he gets so many reps on the field, so many snaps. And Eli does a really good job of getting rid of the ball, of sensing where the rush is coming from, throwing it away, throwing it into the ground. As you know, he's not a real scrambler. He can move in the pocket, but he's not going to move for yards or, you know, or elusiveness, things like that. But they're players are better at pass protection. A guy like John Jerry, their right guard, you know, even though he's a big guy, he's better at pass protection than he is at run blocking. I think Eric Flowers is that way right now as well, the left tackle. So it's a combination of things, but just because they have low sacks doesn't mean that pass protection is quite as good as it looks.
Now, with the kind of the star in terms of Odell Beckham Jr., I think the national narrative is the way to get him off his game as you be physical, you get in his head. That seemed to be the thing the talking heads were talking about early in the season. You've obviously been close to him for his NFL career so far. What is it? What do you think is the best way for teams to defend him, or what do you see teams really try to do to keep him from big plays?
Well, look at this this game last night. He did not have a lot of big plays. His longest catch was 21 yards. He had one touchdown on a short catch. He had 11 targets, 10 catches, 97 yards. It was his fifth 100-yard game. His fifth 10-catch-or-more game of his career in a pretty short career, and this was his lowest passing receiving yardage in those five games. So the Bengals did a pretty good job of keeping things in front of them for the most part, and I think that's the way you have to play them. I mean, this whole thing about getting in Odell's head, he's maturing. There were some instances where he clearly went off the reservation a little bit, but he is not a hothead in that regard. If you have success against him, I think you can get in his head because he'll get frustrated, but he's not this immature nut that is just going to, fly off the handle at every play. He's really not. He's a very intense guy. He cares very much about winning. He's the hardest worker on the team. I mean, he's a tremendous worker. He dances before games. He can't hold in his excitement and his enthusiasm to play. I think what teams have done is bracket him. You don't want him to wreck the game like he wrecked the game against the Ravens. You don't want him to beat you over the top, which he can in virtually all man situations when there's no safety help. So I think what you have to do is press him. Don't give him a free release. Have a safety over the top. If he catches the ball for 6, 7, 8 yards, hope he's catching it going to the ground, or punish him. Because once he gets running, he's almost unstoppable.
Let's flip to the defensive side of the ball, Paul. And again, talking about sack numbers and whether or not we should look into them with that pass rush, the one that they spent so much money on Olivier Vernon, you got Damon Harrison, you obviously have Jason Pierre-Paul. Is that a situation where they're still pressuring the quarterback well, or is this a group that is not achieving at the level it should considering the names on that front line?
Well, yeah, that's definitely a factor, what you just said, because the sack numbers are not good. Now coming off a game where JPP and Vernon both had a sack, they had three sacks, they had Andy Dalton, and their pressure was good. But by and large, their sacks have been down. Vernon has been a singles and doubles hitter, And for $85 million, they wanted him to hit more home runs. Now, Vernon came from the Dolphins. He was not a, multiple sack guy. He was not a double-digit every-year sack guy. He had 7.5 sacks last year. He's a very good player. You can argue with what he's worth, $85 million. He's an excellent player. He plays hard. He plays every snap. He had a pretty bad left wrist injury that he played through, and he could not push off and get separation from offensive tackles. And yet he still played, even though he knew he was not at 100%. He's excellent. He led them last night in stopping the run. He had 10 tackles. He's really good in that department. So, the Giants have no problem with him for it. A young mid-20s guy who's really on the ascent. Jason Pierre-Paul has been more and more active, but let's face it, he's got basically one hand. His right hand is not fully functional with his fingers being blown off in that fireworks accident. So he has problems latching on at times. He just does. It's a way of life. And moving forward, this is he's on a one-year contract. It'll be interesting to see if the Giants or anyone else wants to give him a real long-term commitment, given that his fingers are not going to grow back. I'm not trying to be glib. That's just the facts that, he will have a damaged right hand the rest of his career. So I think Steve Spagnuolo has been blitzing more. They've been getting more pressure, but they do need more sacks. And I think last night was probably a pretty good start.
Looking at this matchup, Paul, the Bears just are really bad at scoring points, and they struggle in the red zone. Play calling's been part of it, personnel issues, injury issues. And then you flip it to the Giants, the best red zone defense in the league. And we've looked at what the kind of revamped secondaries looked like with Janoris Jenkins back there. What's been so effective for them near the goal line to hold teams to field goals this season?
Well, as you said, their secondary is just light years ahead of what it was last year. Landon Collins is playing like a pro bowler. He's leading the Giants in tackles, sacks and interceptions. And as of last week, he was the only player in the league to lead in all three departments. He, like I said, he's playing at a Pro Bowl level. He was a good player last year, although he was a rookie and on a bad defense, so his head was spinning at times. This year, he's made a quantum leap forward. As you mentioned, Janoris Jenkins. I mean, he got $62 million to sign from the Rams, and he was almost immediately branded as a guy who was overpaid. He's been very good for the Giants. He attends to business. He doesn't gamble as much as he did with the Rams at all. I think he has more confidence in the guys around him and the scheme. Dominic Rodgers Cromartie is a very skilled athlete. His snaps are down. They're trying to keep him healthy throughout the whole season. Eli Apple has had some ups and downs as a rookie cornerback, first round pick, but he was very good last night. Played every snap, allowed one pass reception. So they are much better in the secondary, and I think that is playing a huge role in the points being down, in the big plays being down, and certainly the red zone efficiency being up, because they cover well, and if they get any kind of pressure on the quarterback, they will do a really good job covering it. It's a really, really 180-degree difference from last year.
All right, Paul, we will wrap up with this bit of a fun question. So Bears fans are not excited to watch this game, to be honest with you, from what I've seen on Twitter with everything going on here in Chicago. But the one reason they're going to want to watch is the Robbie Gould revenge game is what's on everyone's mind. So what's it been like for New York to have Robbie as the kicker the past month?
Well, it's funny because it was very strange, very unusual. He kicked for the Giants before he ever was at their facility and never practiced for them, because he was signed and went right to London. He flew to London from Chicago. The team flew to London from New York, and he met from New Jersey, actually, and he met the team in London and met his new teammates overseas for the first time. So he kicked extra points and field goals for the Giants on foreign soil before he ever kicked for them in the United States of America, which is probably a first, I would guess. And it's a lot of fun. I mean, I'm sure you guys know Robbie Gould. He's a great guy, from what I can tell in the short time I've been around him. And as soon as he signed, was right during the Cubs clinching the pennant, going into the World Series. And he's such a big Cubs fan that it was fun to talk about him. And he kind of tried to be reserved about it, but he was very excited to tell. And, he's done well. I mean, they haven't asked him to do a whole lot. He's kicked the extra points and the field goals he needed to kick. And, after the really, really disturbing and embarrassing at times Josh Brown situation with the Giants, they've moved on, they've cleared the air, and getting a veteran and a pro like Robbie Gould has really been good. He's gets along well with the punter and the holder and the snapper and those things, and he's been a good addition. So yes, I guess the Bears can tune in and see if Robbie, and I'll tell you one thing, the Giants are hoping it doesn't come to a Robbie Gould field goal. The Giants in their four game winning streak have won these four games by a total of 21 points. They play close games all the time. So against the Bears, who are 2-7, no disrespect, but I think they'd like it to be more than a field goal game.
Well, the way the Bears season's going right now over the last 48 hours, Paul, I think it's destined to come down to a Robbie Gould field goal just to really stick it to the Bears the way things have gone. But we'll certainly see what happens out there at MetLife Stadium on Sunday. Bears-Giants, noon kickoff here in Chicago, 1 o'clock Eastern. Paul Schwartz of the New York Post, Giants beat writers, thanks so much for the insight.
All right. Anytime, guys.
All right, if you want to learn more about the Giants this week, go ahead and give Paul a follow on Twitter at NYPost_Schwartz for Paul Schwartz, a Pro Football Weekly correspondent. He wrote the Giants preview in our PFW magazine, so I thank him for giving us a little insight because, look, we still got games to play. This team's not going to tank. We had this discussion last year.
Why not?
We had this discussion because football players don't tank. You play 16 games a year. When you get to the point in the season that maybe you would tank, you're only talking about a few games left. These guys are all playing for their own contracts. I mean, it's a lot to ask of anybody to quote-unquote tank. I just don't think it happens. I don't think you're going to see it. Look, the Bears might just be bad enough to still find their way into getting a high draft pick, and they can have the ammo to trade up if they want to do that too. So, but we will give you a little analysis in this game. John, I was talking to him about those red zone numbers, and that's really the big difference here. Interestingly enough, something about the Bears defense. Bears are seventh in red zone defense in the league. They are third in goal-to-go defense, and that is how many – what percentage of times an opponent has a goal-to-go and gets a field goal instead of a touchdown. So Bears have been pretty good there. They're seventh in yards per carry allowed, so that's a – as we mentioned, yes, the Giants ran the ball well yesterday against Cincinnati, but that's where the Bears can beat them. Breaking down this matchup, John, was very similar to Bears-Vikings on paper before that game happened. Now, I think right now we can say that the Giants are a better team than the Vikings. Certainly a better situation on offense with Eli Manning and Odell Beckham than the Vikings had. But if the Bears stop the run, there's one thing you know about Eli Manning. He will give you opportunities for interceptions.
Every once in a while, Eli will just turn in a complete dud of a game. And sometimes that's at home, and sometimes it's in spots where you expect him to have a great game. So, yeah, it's certainly possible that the Giants are bad enough to keep things close.
Well, right now, and probably for the rest of the season, if the Bears want to win, it's going to be their defense.
I've had no issues, really, with the Bears' defense this year in Vic Fangio's unit. They have played above, I think, expectations, especially considering how many injuries they've had on that side of the ball.
I mean, you're without Eddie Goldman for that long. You're without Trevathan. You've been out with Kyle Fuller, Bryce Callahan, from McPhee for the first six games. Yeah. Took Leonard Floyd a little bit to get his footing. Lamar Houston. You're right. I mean,
that defense has been fine.
It's crazy. Now, they were bad defending the middle of the field against Tampa. On Sunday, they struggled to cover, but the Giants don't have a great tight end, although not like Cameron Brait was great. See what I did there? It's a rhyme.
It's a little rhyme.
Naperville Central alum. So, the Bears want to win, it's simple. They stop the run. That's going to put Eli in some tough situations. Their pass rush has been playing well, and they can force some turnovers because they need to give the offense short fields. I mean, how could you expect anything out of the offense?
You can't. And you know the offense is going to give the ball back and put you in tough spots a couple of times.
Now, if they actually run the ball over and over and over again, but this is a Giants team that's good against the run. I'll give you a couple numbers here. The Giants are fifth in the league in yards per carry allowed. So, you know, and they're best up the middle. That's where their defense is best against the run. They have Damon Harrison, Jonathan Hankins there. That's where the Bears love to run it. Or that's where the Bears had the most success running it, I should say.
So do we see maybe some Kadeem Carey or Jeremy Langford?
I think they're going to – I think if you're Dow Loggins and you know Jay's coming off a bad game, you're without Jeffrey, so the Giants, you know, can do whatever they want in terms of coverage. You don't have to worry about doubling Jeffrey. I think you just have to be creative with the run game and treat it almost like the Minnesota game, a conservative approach, quick slants for Cutler, move the pocket a little bit, but just run it. I'm not picking the Bears to win. They don't deserve me to pick them to win, frankly.
They haven't earned that.
But I'm actually probably going to pick them to cover, which sounds a little crazy.
What's the spread right now?
I believe it's 7. I believe it's a touchdown. I'm going to effort that right now. These are things I should know before I start talking about the spread, one would think.
I could reasonably guess it was a touchdown.
Yeah. So, 7 points. I'll pick them to lose by 6. You know, because it's just one of those things that the defense is good enough. I don't think the Giants are necessarily that good. And
I mean, it's not like the Giants are world beaters.
Right. And, you know, it would be total Jay Cutler to not play a great game, but to play fine.
To play well enough to keep them in contention into the fourth quarter.
So
Before you know that interception is coming in the fourth quarter.
Right. So I'll go Giants 25, Bears 19.
I like those odd scores.
Yeah, you know I love those.
Yeah, I'm probably not going to go as odd. I think Giants 27, Bears 21.
Okay. You know, look, the Bears just haven't scored very many points this year. So
yeah, I don't expect the Bears to put up 30.
You know, it's been Connor Barth game. We'll see if it comes down to Robbie Gould. That'll do it for this week's episode of PFW's Chicago Football Podcast. Quick shout-outs to our sponsors again, Loot Crate. Use our promo code Shaw when you're there, fanessentials.net. Our promo code is Chicago. Thank yous to our guest, Eric Edholm, Yahoo Sports NFL Shutdown Corner, and Paul Schwartz of the New York Post. Remember to check out all of our work at profootballweekly.com/bears. Follow us on Twitter at Bears_insider and add us on Snapchat. I'll be there for Bears Giants at MetLife Stadium. So add Bears_insider to your Snapchat list for sights and sounds from inside the stadium. For my producer, John Sally, I am Kevin Fishbane. Thanks so much for listening and hopefully subscribing on iTunes and giving us a 5-star rating. We will have more Bears talk next week.